The world we live in, of course, today is not the world that God created. The creation, of course, was a beautiful place, and the setting for mankind was a gorgeous, resplendently beautiful garden, and the animals were never a threat to mankind, and there was this incredible beauty and harmony. And then this powerful spirit being that who had once attacked God and his throne turned his attack on mankind, the creation of God. And he did not do so with weapons of mass destruction, but rather he used very subtle, seductive methods. And it speaks of this taking place here in Genesis 3 and in verse 1, where it says, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord had made. And he said unto the woman, Yes, has God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it. Neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, You shall not surely die. For God knows that in the day you eat thereof, your eyes will be open, and in fact, you'll be like gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons." And so here you see the seduction of Adam and Eve taking place, as he spoke first to the woman. And Satan uses that same strategy today. That is, there's a process in which he first discredits God, he'll minimize his authority, then he'll minimize the penalty for any disobedience, so we won't die, you know, this isn't going to hurt any of us for doing it. Then he offers some sort of reward of some pleasure or something that we want. And you can certainly be sure that this tree appealed to human nature. That is, it was good for food, again, the lust of the flesh. It was pleasant to the eyes. The lust of the eyes was affected, and it could make one wise. And so you see where the pride of life, again, enters into it. And it's these things that are not of God, and these things that are of the devil and this world. And let's go to 2 Corinthians as we talk about this. But these are the things that he uses today on every one of us. 2 Corinthians 4 for a familiar scripture here. And so the first human beings chose to take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Of course, by taking this tree, it didn't give them the knowledge of what was right and what was wrong. Only God has that prerogative, and only he has that authority, and only he has that power to be able to determine what is actually right and wrong. What they did was they took of a tree or a way of life that allowed them to choose for themselves what was right and what was wrong. And that is the same path all humans have followed down to this very day. And from that time forward, we've all gone that direction. As a result, we have then followed and lived in Satan's world. And it is his world, and he's the god of it, as it says here in 2 Corinthians 4:4, in whom the god of this world, which is speaking of the devil, he's blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them. So back to Matthew 4, where we were earlier in the first message today. Back to Matthew 4. This fasting isn't working on my throat very well. Matthew 4. You know, when it says that Satan is the god of this world, you have to understand what this means. That is the ramifications of it all. that this means this. He is the primary influence on the hearts and minds of the people in this world. He is the one that sets the standards for the ideals and the opinions and goals and views of most of the people in this world today. All of the world's philosophies are in part, they are shaped and fashioned by him. The educational systems are affected by him, yes. Our ideas of trade and commerce in the corporate world today, their values and their standards set by him, because he corrupted the angels in the beginning by his merchandising of things on this earth. And he is above all things the purveyor of false and perverse religions. You know, when the people who are religious say all paths, all roads lead to the same place, they actually are saying something that's true. Every path leads to him, and it leads to the doorstep of Satan the devil, who we celebrate the banishment of today. They fall into his death trap. But you and I and the rest of humanity, we grow up within this world, and so we're very familiar with its ways. But there isn't one of us can say, this is paradise. No. Everybody suffers hardship. Everybody suffers terrible trials and problems in this world we live in. Jesus Christ was born into the same world you and I are born into. And he faced the same kinds of temptations in every respect that we do. And at one point, Satan offered him something of enormous value. In Matthew 4, verse 8, it says this, "Again the devil took him up into an exceedingly high mountain, and he showed him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them. And then he said unto him, all of these things will I give unto you if you'll fall down and worship me." And I remind us today of this vital truth. The devil could offer Jesus Christ the kingdoms of this world because they were his to offer. They belong to him, and he is behind the governments of this world. He is behind the corruption that we find in government. He is behind the wars that one government make with another government. And so today we live in this world that's entirely, as the scriptures say, completely deceived by him. And we, I believe, even in the Church of God, don't understand the depths and the pervasiveness of the deception that he has brought to this world. But you and I live in a world that is strange and alien to us because of our beliefs and our calling. And we grow up knowing only this world before we're called. We don't really know what went on before the time that we came into the world. And so as a result, what we don't see is how generation after generation after generation, the world is getting worse and worse. And because we live day to day to day to day, we don't see that each day this world is getting a little bit worse. And as the saying goes, age and treachery will always beat and outmatch youth and enthusiasm. It'll do it every time. And the reason I say this is because the devil is very old. He's been around for almost forever. And so here we are. We find ourselves in a world in which the devil has all the time in the world, and he just takes slow steps to move things in a direction that's more and more away from God's way. And he takes time, and because it takes time like this, we often don't recognize what is taking place. You understand, we look back and see the television shows, the movies, and the music we listened to 20 years ago. We think, this is horrifying how much the change has taken place. If that would have taken place in 1 week, we would have recognized it immediately and not bought in. But we tend to buy in because it moves so slowly, we don't recognize those changes. And so we find ourselves in this world today that we live in, and it's a world of enormous affluence, really. And There's such an increase in communications and technology and wealth today, and people have all become accustomed to these things because this is the life we've grown up in. We're just so used to having every luxury you could possibly imagine, and just about anything we want, and giant big screen televisions and beautiful cars and nice homes and new computers and all kinds of adult toys, if you will. We find ourselves living in this age, but you know what it's done? It's produced a fear in people. They're afraid to lose the things they have. And so these things, stuff, materialism, holds them in bondage. And it's one of his devices, one of the wiles of the devil to move our culture and our society in this direction. And to me, it's interesting that he tells the Church of Laodicea that is at the end of the age and they're rich and increased with goods, and he says, go buy gold tried in the fire. You see how he uses that analogy of gold, because that's what they care about. But he's talking about a different kind of gold, isn't he? He's talking about golden character. That's what he's talking about. Buy my character in the trial, the fire that is to come. So you and I have witnessed changes over the years in the values and the standards of our society that have been quite shocking in a way. You know, in the past, our society, our culture, and this nation in particular, you know, we believed in and we were based on Christian values that were absolutes to us. You know, people knew, everyone knew, and they all were on the same page of what was right and what was wrong. And so sexual deviancy, we knew, wrong. Divorce, it was considered to be wrong. Abortion was considered to be wrong, wasn't it? Everybody thought this. Pornography was wrong. Now they're telling us all these things are right, because we're choosing for ourselves what's right and what's wrong. And there was such a strong belief in God in the early years in America. The commandments were accepted, or at least if they weren't, they were respected. They were considered the basis for our law. And the commands are what bound our society together. Belief in those same principles that are found in God's law. They provided the very basis for the laws America was built on. Everyone believed in this. It was like a moral anchor to everyone's life. That's how America started. Roy Moore explains why these commandments are so vital. He says, the Ten Commandments are the succinct summary of God's law given to humanity for righteous living. They represent God's law, which is higher than any man-made law. And without recognition of higher law, there are no limits to man's behavior. And that is such a truism, isn't it? Without a higher law that we all conform to, there's no limits to how depraved Satan can make us be. This man was Alabama's chief justice at one time, and he was eventually removed from his court. His crime? For keeping the commandments visible in his courtroom. It all started when he was hearing a specific case. There were two male strippers that were on trial for murdering a drug dealer. And at that time, the defense attorney for the two male strippers noticed these commandments, and he brought up an objection to them as a part of his reasoning for the judge's decision against these men. And he said, this man's prejudiced by religion. And so the ACLU got involved, and they then took him to court. And they filed a lawsuit saying that these things were unconstitutional. And so while he was on trial, he was asked, Judge Moore was asked, do you believe and that you are going to, in the future, acknowledge God in your courtroom? And he looked, of course, absolutely, he said. And so he was kicked out of his own courtroom. He was taken out. You know, when this happened, 88% of the people in his state were in favor on his side. 88%. You understand what's happening? Even today this is happening everywhere you look. All the people believe a certain way, the government is going a totally different opposite way. They're being led. And that's because all the kingdoms of this world belong to who? Satan, the devil, is who they belong to. And he has his minions and demons running governments around this world. You know, at the same time, schools have begun dumbing down America, our nation. They believe in evolution and not a special creation. And today, there's such an incredible bias that has developed. I remember in that movie, Expelled, where it shows that the scientific community, instead of being objective, have a Nazi-like bias, and that people that are scientists who believe in a possible intelligent design, those individuals find themselves either fired, they lose their jobs, or they can't get grants so that they can continue on their particular field of study. It's happening all over. Today, schools are teaching why Derek has two daddies, but they're not going to teach the principles upon which America was based. When you take a history class today, you don't read what the founding fathers believed. Everybody believes wrong ideas about what they were. In fact, they don't even call them founding fathers anymore. You know why? Because there's a gender bias there. They are now founding framers. That's what they are. They're the framers of America. You understand? It's just getting so perverse, you know. They would, as they do today, teach that our founding framers, you know, they believed in separation of church and state. You understand? And so they actually never thought there should be a separation from God and state. But that's what they have done. It's subtly been twisted, hasn't it? Over time, it has now become a case where you can't have God in government. But you understand the framers originally believed that you had to have God in government. And we've moved from having to have God to government, for he's not allowed here. Not allowed in the schools, not allowed in the courtrooms. How does this all take place? Subtly, by Satan's influence, bit by bit, step by step, piece by piece, until everything is turned around, until it's upside down and backwards in the world we live in today. You know, so he got this to be reinterpreted, and people now, most people actually believe this lie, that you cannot have God in any part of government. And you know, it's become our main value today in society. I think it's called open-mindedness. It means there's no such thing. Once you are open-minded, once you accept tolerance and diversity, there's no real truth. I remember Alan Bloom wrote a book about the closing of American mind. He had the most interesting concept in the book, and he showed repeatedly over and over again that when America opened itself up to think that all the cultures and all the societies and all the different religions and all the different ways were equal to ours, we closed our mind to ever seeing the truth. And that's what happened. When you start opening yourself up to be tolerant of anything and everything and say it's all equal, you automatically blind yourself to ever finding out what is absolute and what is truth. And there is absolute truth. But today, you can't find it. No one's allowed to believe in it. No one's allowed to take that stand. And so what's really ironic to me is that there is a single absolute that America has seemingly adopted, and it is this: there is no single absolute. You know, it's really ironic to me. You know, but this whole concept holds that everything is relative, therefore the eternal truths of God cannot be tolerated. And so the world has again pushed and pushed bit by bit to move their line. How far they'll go has been moved over and more. More and more, and we're becoming more and more secular, and now society openly opposes the Christian values our nation was built upon. The exact opposite is happening. The exact opposite is believed to what we were founded on. And so what do we have now? A result? Steady increase in homosexuality. Strong support today for abortion on demand. It's just expected that most people think it should be that way. And you know what? As a result, there's a growing belief or reluctance to obey authority on all levels, you know, and we're seeing people who are becoming less and less willing to do work of any kind. Marriage is becoming abandoned. There's becoming an increase in pornography that's going on in our world today, and with it, a constant increase in lawlessness, brutality, violence, and corruption is taking place on almost every level in our country. At one time, we all knew homosexuality was wrong. We understood that it was a part of every single society that ever failed, every empire that ever came down. Part of their coming down was when the society started to adopt homosexuality. You know, today, General Pace, commander-in-chief in our military, said that he thought homosexuality was immoral and that we shouldn't do anything immoral or advocate it. So here was the response. People became unglued. Hillary Clinton said homosexuality is not immoral. President Obama said, I do not agree with General Pace that homosexuality is immoral. Nancy Pelosi said, we don't need moral judgment from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And Senator John Warner of Virginia said he strongly disagrees with the chairman's view that homosexuality is immoral. You get my point. The highest leaders in the nation are telling people now it's not immoral. You know, and when one person says it, they stand out and they're immediately under attack. And this is a man that's been around a long time and in a very high position in this world's system. So also, what's really, I think, been instrumental in the move to where we are today has been music in our lives. You know, we went from songs originally. When they wrote songs to glorify God. That's why they wrote them. And then we moved from that to glorifying women. And now we write them to produce hate, you know, and all kinds of perverse ideas that go on. And you know, they write songs today to promote Satan. Isn't that an amazing flip around? Today, the average teen listens to music, they say, about 6 hours a day. And again, Professor Alan Bloom writes this in his book, that rock and roll has become their passion and nothing else excites them as it does. They cannot take seriously anything alien to their music. Boy, that is so true today. Remember that song that was made popular by Barry Manilow? You know, I've been alive forever. I'm music. I write the song. So who's influencing some of the music that's happening in our society today? Rock star David Bowie said this in the Rolling Stone magazine. Rock has always been the devil's music. I believe rock and roll is dangerous. I feel we're only heralding something even darker than ourselves. Yes, the song of The Conjuring by Megadeth, they sing out, I am the devil's advocate, a salesman, if you will. On their cover, a song called The Prince, Metallica sings this. Angel from below, I wish to sell my soul. Devil, take my soul with diamonds you repay. I don't care for heaven, so don't look for me to cry. And I'll burn in hell from the day I die. Rock star Marilyn Manson proudly boasts this. Hopefully, I'll be remembered as the person who brought an end to Christianity. How in the world did we get to a point where music has lyrics like this? Inch by inch, generation by generation, he has all the time in the world to pervert a people on earth, the mankind today. Certainly has been true. You know, and how about movies? He uses movies, doesn't he, to promote enormous volumes of sex and violence spread all over the screen. Interestingly, Ingrid Bergman said this, no form of art goes beyond ordinary consciousness as film does, straight to our emotions, deep into the twilight of our soul. And that is so true. Every movie you see is selling something. The author has something in mind, and they have their package that's involved in that movie that they want to get you to accept their concept. Andy Warhol said this, it's the movies that have really been running things in America ever since they were invented. They show you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, how to feel about it, and how to look how you feel about it. But that's really the truth, isn't it? You know, I think it's interesting to read this. Gregory Peck commented about the movies, and he said this: "Generally, my characters were dignified and brave men who did their duty stoically. Today, the heroes are the anti-heroes of yesterday. They're motivated by hatred and greed and violence. They're rude, vulgar, ill-educated, and incapable of making an effort because they're totally selfish and devoid of morals." That's our generation. Maybe not your generation, you younger ones, but it is my generation. I saw his films on television when I was young, and I've seen some of the films today. And the difference is so frighteningly striking and scary about where things are headed to me. So over time, movies have become more and more violent. Ratings have changed. And so, you know, the old R rating is really now the PG rating. And how did it slip over there? Small increments over time, where people got used to certain things. And now this is R, where this used to be R. That's what's happened. Ironically, to me, in our world today, I wonder how many, if not most people, believe that the devil really doesn't exist, that he's just an analogy to teach a lesson. He doesn't really exist. But consider the morning headlines of today, Fox News. That is, the U.S. is frightened that it now is going to have pipeline explosions all over. You know why? We haven't even touched our infrastructure for years, have we? And so there is a headline. Stories say deadly attack threatens to mar the Afghan parliamentary vote. Illinois Senate hopeful tied to the mob. Security chief under fire for civilian surveillance. Expiring tax cuts are going to hit Americans at all levels. Won't that be fun? You know? Sixth arrest in the threat against the Pope. Sexting, Wisconsin prosecutor won't resign. U.S. couple indicted in nuclear weapons case. They're going to get Venezuela, I think it was, to give them the nuclear weapons. Acid attack was self-inflicted. U.S. is ignoring terror at risk. And the Octomom, remember her? 8 kids? She decided she has to go on welfare. So we get to pay for that. Lindsay Lohan admits to failing a drug test. What do you know, going back to jail? Activists plan Los Angeles rally to protest shooting of Guatemalan. Chinese hold an anti-Japan protest over boat incident on this sensitive political anniversary. Police arrest second suspect in the killing of employee at LA Medical Marijuana Dispensary, which are all over the place in California, Los Angeles. Christians plan to defy police. Muslims warning against praying at a closed church in Indonesia. And a magnitude 6.3 earthquake shakes Afghanistan, and Wisconsin Bank is the 125th bank to fold in this year. That's the news for today, this morning, when I was finishing up the sermon. How did it get so bad? And how do we read this and not scream out, something's wrong, something's terribly, terribly wrong in our world? What is going on here? You know, if those headlines don't convince you that there is an evil influence in our world, I want you to consider some statistics. Number of abortions per year is approximately 42 million. Number of abortions per day, 115,000. Can you imagine that? Every day in the world? This is the world we live in today. World War I had deaths totaling 65 million. World War II had deaths that reached 72 million people. Genocide by personal extermination, 11 million Jews killed by the Nazis, 10 million Ukrainians destroyed by the Soviets, 10 million Native Americans were killed by European settlers when they came here. You know, imagine exterminating a people. Who would think to do that? It has to be coming from an evil source. You know, there are famines. 43 million died under the Chinese Communist Party's rule because of famine. 20 million under Joseph Stalin. Human sacrifice reached 1,500,000 by the Aztec peoples. Under King Leopold II, 10 million slaves of his were killed because he wanted to get the prophets from the rubber and the elephant ivory. And so he enslaved his people. And what he did was he set quotas for each individual. If you didn't get the quota, he cut off your hands. And that many people died as a result. That's not long ago. Isn't this a world something? Isn't it something where it's gone, where it's at? Alcoholism claims 1,283,204 human lives every year. 9.5 million people die from infectious diseases. 5.4 million die from tobacco. Each year there's 170 million cases of type 2 diabetes, which our beloved friend Dennis has. 7.2 million die from heart disease. The world's sick. It's sick. God never intended mankind to be sick like this, to die from genocide, tortures, and cutting off their hands, and nations killing other nations and peoples and cultures. It's the world we live in today, though, and yet people refuse to even believe that a devil exists. I mean, I don't think mankind would do a lot of these things if he knew he was doing it. But he doesn't know. He's been subtly influenced by a spiritual power. But it's ironic that while they don't believe in him, some believe to the extent they actually worship him. It is Anton LaVey, as you remember, started the Church of Satan, and since that time it has really grown. I searched the website. There was 245,000 occult sites around the world that came up on Google, and there were 33,000 occult shops where you can buy the things that you need to make your sacrifices and perform your rituals in our world today. Satanism is growing in popularity. Let's go over to Leviticus 16, where we're going to see the solution to the problem is in Leviticus 16 in a ceremony that is one that is surrounds the day that we celebrate and we honor today. There's no question to me that Satan exists and that he's real, and the Bible has some things to say about him, calling him these names: accuser of the brethren, ancient serpent, your enemy, the evil one, the father of lies, the god of this age, the great dragon and murderer, the one who leads the whole world astray, the prince of this world, the spirit that works in those who are disobedient, and the one who is the tempter. Over and over, boy, you see that every one of these names applies when you look at how our world has changed in the few decades that we have witnessed in our life, and then as you look at history over its time. He's done so much damage, that is, the devil has, to this world that we live on and to mankind who lives on it. And today we celebrate putting him away for 1,000 years. And that, to me, is something I really look forward to. And the story of our celebration begins here in the second verse of Leviticus. And he said, and the Lord said unto Moses, speak unto Aaron your brother, that he come not at all times into the holy place within the veil before the mercy seat, which is upon the ark, that he die not. For I will appear in the cloud upon the mercy seat. Thus shall Aaron come into the holy place with a young bullock for a sin offering and a ram for a burnt offering, and he shall put on the holy linen coat, that he shall have the linen breeches on his flesh, and he shall be girded with the linen girdle, and with the linen mitre shall he be attired. These are holy garments, therefore he shall wash his flesh in water, and so put them on. And so Aaron, the high priest at the time, was to come in to the Holy of Holies, and he used to come in wearing this attire. And you remember, often when the religious ceremonies, he would wear the breastplate or the ephod, the articles of clothing that were dress of dignity and honor, and they reflected his office of high priest. Now he's coming in a different set of clothing, and it shows a humility, and it's just linen breeches and pants. And it pictures him coming to God, not as an officer, but as you and me, as a man. And so he has to come as a sinner before God, and he has to offer a sacrifice for his sins to make atonement for his transgressions personally. And so he was not to come in at any time. Remember, if you're in God's presence. You cannot live and see God. So he could come into the Holy of Holies once a year, and he would do this where the Ark of the Covenant was with the cherubims. If he went in unauthorized, he would perish as a result. And as a high priest, he'd go in only one time a year, the Day of Atonement, the day that we're observing this day today, is the day to do it. And so before he could do that, he would have to offer a bull as a sacrifice. And the bull, of course, reflects the power and the untiring work of Jesus Christ. And this was given as a sin offering. He would lay his hands on the bull, and then his sins would be transferred to the bull, and then the bull would pay the price for the penalty of sin, and that was death. And it would be offered at the door of the tabernacle. Ram was also offered as a burnt offering. And the ram, of course, pictured the leadership role of Jesus Christ as well. And it was a burnt offering, and this foreshadowed Christ giving all of himself. Verse 5, I'm going to read through this a little bit, so hang in there with me and listen up. He shall take of the congregation of the children of Israel 2 kids of the goats for a sin offering, 1 ram for a burnt offering, and Aaron shall offer his bullock and the sin offering, which is for himself, and make atonement for himself and for his house. And he shall take the 2 goats and present them before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And Aaron shall cast lots upon the 2 goats, 1 lot for the Lord and the other lot for the scapegoat. And Aaron shall bring the goat upon the Lord's upon which the Lord's lot fell, and offer him for a sin offering. But the goat on which the lot fell to be the scapegoat, he shall be presented alive before the Lord to make an atonement with him, and to let him go for a scapegoat into the wilderness. And Aaron shall bring the bullock, the sin offering, which is for himself, and make an atonement for himself and for his house. And he shall kill the bullock of the sin offering, which is for himself. And he shall take a censer full of burning coals of fire from off the altar before the Lord, and his hands full of sweet incense beaten small, and bring it within the veil. And he'll offer the incense upon the fire before the Lord, that the cloud of the incense may cover the mercy seat that's upon the testimony, that he die not. And he shall take of the blood of the bullock and sprinkle it with his finger upon the mercy seat eastward, and before the mercy seat shall he sprinkle the blood with his finger 7 times. Then shall he kill a he-goat of the sin offering, or kill the goat of the sin offering that is for the people, and bring his blood within the veil, and do with the blood what he did with the blood of the bullock, and sprinkle it upon the mercy seat and before the mercy seat. And he shall make an atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanness of the children of Israel, and because of their transgressions and all their sins, so shall he do for the tabernacle of the congregation that remains among them in the midst of their uncleanness. And so this animal was sacrificed for the sins of the people. And we'll see that later on as we discuss this. And there shall be no man in the tabernacle of the congregation when he goes to make an atonement in the holy place until he comes out. And he's made an atonement for himself and for his household and for all the congregation of Israel. And he shall go out under the altar that is before the Lord to make an atonement for it, and shall take of the blood of the bullock and of the blood of the goat, and put on the horns of the altar round about. And he shall sprinkle of the blood upon it with his finger 7 times, and cleanse it, and hallow it from the uncleanness of the children of Israel. And when he's made an end of reconciling the holy place, and the tabernacle of the congregation, and the altar, he shall bring the live goat. And Aaron shall lay both of his hands on the head of the live goat, and confess over him all the iniquities of the children of Israel, and all their transgressions of all their sins, putting them on the head of the goat, and shall send him away by the hand of a fit man into the wilderness. And the goat shall bear upon him all their iniquities unto a land not inhabited, and he shall let go the goat in the wilderness. And Aaron shall come into the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall put off the linen garments which he had put on when he went in the holy place, and leave them there. And he shall wash his flesh with water in the holy place, and put on his garments, and come forth, and offer his burnt offering and the burnt offering of the people, and make atonement for himself and for the people. And the fat of the sin offering shall he burn on the altar, and he shall let go the goat for the scapegoat, shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in water, and afterward come into the camp. and the bullock for the sin offering and the goat for the sin offering, whose blood was bought in to make atonement in the holy place, shall one carry forth outside the camp, and they shall burn it with the fire and with their skins and their flesh and all their dung. And he that burns them shall wash his clothes and bathe his flesh in water, and afterwards he shall come in to the camp. So the blood of the bull was taken into the Holy of Holies and sprinkled. And again, this pictures the blood of Christ that cleanses him, that is the high priest, from sin. And then he would put the one drop on the mercy seat, but seven in front of the mercy seat. And so you see again that the only way to even approach the mercy seat of Christ, the only way to come and stand on that glass, is through the blood of Jesus Christ and through his sacrifice. And that's the only way that we can ever approach God. And I think that's very symbolic here. And he would also bring a golden censer and incense with it. And it was like a gold chafing dish of a sort. Now, this was different because on every other day that incense was offered, it was offered in a silver dish, a silver censer. But on this one single day, it was a golden one. And that shows the importance and the magnitude of what's taking place in God's mind regarding this day. And he would burn the offering, that is the incense, with the coals in the censer, and the smoke would ascend. And again, as we've seen in other scriptures, that incense and the smoke from it represents the prayers of God's saints that go to his throne. And so he offers a sacrifice for himself and then one for the entire congregation. And then he takes the two goats for a sin offering. And he would take two blocks of wood and he would put it in an urn, because he would cast lots for which one was which one was the Lord's and which one was not the Lord's. And so he would write on one, Lashem, to represent the name of God, actually, and the other one was written, Laezo, for the scapegoat. And so he would shake this urn and with these two blocks of wood in it, and then he would take his hand and put it in, and he would pull out one, and this was one for the Lord that was for him, and then the other goat lot would be sacrificed, and this was offering as a sin offering. And he would sprinkle the blood the same way he did for the bull. So this offering was for the entire congregation of Israel and was given for the people and for the tabernacle, or today's wording would be for the congregation and the church. And so it covers us, and it covers our carnal forms of worship, our weaknesses and our inability to do things right, because all of us have sinned. And so all of us need this sacrifice. And it pictured Jesus Christ's sacrifice for the sins of the world and the people. And after he had offered this and given the incense, he would wash again and change his garments back to the official priestly garments. And then he would be able to act out the role of Jesus Christ as our high priest. And he would once again fulfill this office. And he put blood on the altar, and he would offer the sacrifices there, and the inner parts would be burned as they are. And the bodies of these animals, I think it's interesting, were treated differently. The flesh and hide were burned outside the camp. And I believe this too represented Jesus Christ, as you remember, that he was crucified outside the city, not inside the city. And so this was picturing that fact, I think, that would take place in the future. And so now the sins of the high priest and the people are atoned for, and the priest now deals with, in Christ's role, he deals with the Azazel goat. And both hands are laid on the head of this goat, and he would confess all the sins of the people over this goat, and the sins were put on him, and then he was led by a strong man out into the wilderness and released in a place that was uninhabited, it says. And so most professing Christians today and many commentaries will suggest this Azazel goat is picturing Jesus Christ. And I think it's almost ironic that they would do that, because Satan is the god of this world. And the Azazel goat actually represents that being Satan. So he has all of the sins placed on him after the atonement has already been made for the people. So the goat is not making an atonement in that sense. It's not for the forgiveness of sins. And he is called the scapegoat. And today we think of that as someone who's innocent, who actually takes the blame. And that isn't really what the word Azazel means at all. Instead, it refers to the one who is to blame. That's what the Azazel represents. And it is a representation of Satan, actually. And it's God who chooses, who atones for sin. And it's he that chooses this goat. And one is for the Lord, and the other is not. So isn't it make sense that the other one is not Jesus Christ? You know, but Azazel, interestingly, is discussed in the book of Enoch, and there it's Azazel is portrayed as one of the fallen angels, and it is Satan, actually translated or used as Satan in the Mandean, Sabian, and Arabian mythologies. And so the priesthood today has been destroyed. The temple has been destroyed. But this celebration, this observance, continues forever. Leviticus 16, verse 29. And this shall be a statute forever unto you, that in the seventh month, on the tenth day of the month, you shall afflict your souls and do no work at all, whether it be on your one of your own country or a stranger that sojourns among you. Nobody works on that day. And you notice what else was it that we read? There were only these sacrifices specifically named. There were no other offerings given on this day. So it would be wrong for us to take an offering on the Day of Atonement when no work is to be done. It's treated like with the same terminology as the Sabbath is treated, in which no offerings are ever taken up. And Paul says he, you know, put it aside on the first day of the week so that when I come, no offerings will be taken up, because offerings weren't taken up on the Sabbath, and that's when he would have come to see the people. So on that day shall the priest make an atonement for you to cleanse you, that you may be clean from all your sins before the Lord. And it shall be a Sabbath of rest unto you, and you shall afflict your souls by a statute forever. Repeatedly we see afflicting your souls is stated to be fasting throughout the Bible. And the priest, whom he shall anoint and who he shall consecrate to minister in the priest's office in his father's stead, shall make an atonement and shall put on the linen clothes, even the holy garments, and he shall make atonement for all the holy sanctuary, and shall make an atonement for the tabernacle of the congregation, for the altar, and make an atonement for the priests, for all the people of the congregation. And this shall be an everlasting statute unto you, to make atonement for the children of Israel for all their sins once a year. And he did as the Lord commanded Moses. Revelation 20. Of course, this killing of the one goat representing Christ and putting the other goat out to an uninhabited area where he cannot affect anybody is picturing a fulfillment. As we know, the holy days are foreshadowing things to come, and this day is foreshadowing that event of finally putting Satan out into a wilderness area where he can harm no one, and where it's uninhabited, where he'll be by himself. Revelation 20 and verse 1. And I saw an angel come down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold on the dragon, that old serpent, which is the devil and Satan, and he bound him 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal upon him that he should deceive the nations no more until 1,000 years should be fulfilled. And after that, he must be loosed for a season. And so the Day of Atonement we celebrate today pictures our reconciliation to God. And it also shows the blame for who really caused all of this in the first place being placed on that being that is Satan the devil. And then it is where the blame belongs, and then he is cast out of the presence of all other living beings. And ultimately, it is he who will carry the guilt for all that has gone on. He who will ultimately be cast out. And then there will finally be the restoration of God's government. And you can see how he needs to be out for the restoration of God's government to take place. And these were the responsibilities of the high priest on atonement. And this is the responsibility of our high priest when the time comes to ensure that this occurs. And he will rid the earth of the devil. And let's finish in Ephesians, in Ephesians 6. The earth is going to once again be made like the Garden of Eden, inhabitable and beautiful. And this is the hope, not only our hope, but unknown to the rest of the world, it is the hope of all mankind. Without Satan's influence, Christ will be able to establish the kingdom. He'll be able to bring peace to the world. He'll be able to bring those right values we were once based on back, and people will prosper and they'll enjoy happiness and have hope like they've never thought imaginable. It will be one of the most wonderful times in the history of mankind, and it will be a time of enormous peace and enormous cooperation, and it is going to be something that is going to be looked forward to by God's people and has been looked forward to from time immemorial. But I want us to remember one thing today before we conclude. It hasn't happened yet. He is still there. You see what he's done to our society, and if you think that society isn't affecting us to some degree, I think you need to think again. We've all been tainted. We all have been, and we all need to resist the devil, as it says, who is responsible for so many evils in our world today. And it says that he broadcasts, that he's the prince of the power of the air, and he broadcasts just like a radio station, you know, just broadcasting. Right now in the air, there are hundreds of channels, hundreds of them, and we can't see them, can we? But one channel is Satan's channel. And if we start feeling hostility, if we start feeling resentment, if we start feeling anger, and if we start getting in, the closer we get to that wavelength, you ever notice you turn in a radio station, there's static, and then it gets more and more clear and more and more clear? Well, the more we get in a mood and an attitude like him, the more his broadcast feeds right into our attitude, and people do amazing things and shoot children in schools, blow themselves up. They do all kinds of things based on anger, hostility, and hatred. And we can tune in to that wavelength if we start getting on that wavelength. And so I say to us, we've got to resist. And so therefore, let's put on, let's strive, let's read once in a while Ephesians 6 and see what it says. And let's put on that armor of God. Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Because we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, and against spiritual wickedness in high places. And that's why I say the kingdoms are his, and he is in power, in places of power. Wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about with the truth, and on the breastplate of righteousness. Let's strive to be righteous and live right. And let's always advance the truth. And let your feet be shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Let's always care about the gospel. The kingdom of God is coming. Let's always keep that hope in front of us. And let's always preach that message. And never start getting into Protestant ideas and thoughts the way some are today. And so, above all, take the shield of faith, wherein you shall be able to abide and quench the fiery darts of the wicked. And that's so true. Don't stop believing. Keep our faith strong. Things are going to get tough. When they do, remember our hope. Remember whose fault it is. And remember he's going to be banished from the earth. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, which does cut pretty deep sometimes, praying always with all prayer and supplication in the Spirit, and watching thereunto with all perseverance and supplication for the saints. So let's us strive to walk in God's Spirit, as Paul admonishes us to do. Let's strive to walk in that Spirit, and let's do so until the glorious day comes when the devil and his evil and his spirit is done away with. And then the way of God will reign in the hearts of men and women around the world.